What is up, guys? Welcome to this podcast. My name is Salman Ali, at Salman Ali NBA on Twitter. Here joined by Rafael Barlow, author of NBA Big Board. How are you doing, man?
I'm doing good, man. How are you?
I'm doing all right. So I have one question for you before we talk about the Rockets. So I've been to Summer League each of the last 5 years. I didn't go this year. I've never seen the Thomas and Mack Center as packed as it was for those two Victor Wembanyama games. That was an all-caps spectacle for the NBA. They did a really good job of marketing this kid. How was it to experience all that in person?
I'd say the Zion year was close, even though I wasn't at that game. I was on my way to Summer League that year, but I know Zion's game sold out. And then the only other time I've had to, like, I've seen people in, like, the upper deck was 2017, but that was mostly just, like, the Lonzo Ball year, and the Laker fans came out to see him. But for Victor's game, it was sold out. I think they said it's only the third time it sold out, and the two other times was the games that I mentioned. But people were at the arena, I want to say like an hour and a half before the first game. And
that's just, I mean, yeah,
Vegas, July, you know, it's crazy hot. The people were out there waiting. And so it's, on one hand, it was good, but I'm kind of old school Summer League when you used to be able to move around and really network with people. It just seems like this year there was like 1,000 people trying to network and then thousands of people that were there. And so it got to the point where, like, if you got up to, like, get something to drink, your seat was gone because, you know, it's not assigned seating. Right. And so on one hand, it's great for the NBA that, I mean, just the buzz and the attention and the fanfare was crazy. But from someone that used to be able to, like, go to the restroom or go get something to eat and come back and sit in the same area. And then now you're just like, I can't afford to move because if I move, I'm going to end up being at the top. And I had a media pass and I could move around. And it was still, I mean, impossible just to find a good seat.
I've never seen even the Zion game. I got to Summer League after Zion had already played. He was already ruled out by the time I got there.
Same so
it
me.
Was, yeah, I missed it. Yeah, and I heard all about it. I saw it on, that was, I think that was the earthquake year, right? That was the earthquake. Yeah.
And then the Paul George, Kawhi
trade. Yeah.
Yeah, it happened the same day, same night. So yeah, I remember that.
It was nuts. It was nuts. And then I left Summer League. And as I was leaving, Westbrook got traded for Chris Paul, so I had to do a podcast in the airport.
I remember that. I remember exactly where I was when I heard that. I was checking out my hotel, and I was putting my stuff in the Uber, and that's when I think I felt like my phone buzz, and then my brother called me, and he was talking about it. But yeah, it's crazy how you remember exactly where you were when some things happen, especially like at Summer League.
Oh, I was pissed. I was pissed because I had just done a podcast the night before with Kelly Eco, and we were just on the entire podcast. It was like, all right, the Rockets are done. The Rockets are done. They're not doing anything else. Summer's over. This is going to be their team. And then that whole podcast, I mean, I uploaded it, but it felt like worthless. I mean, you've been there, right? Like it's that's how it is. But it was fun. It was definitely a fun experience. This was not, I've never seen anything like that. But let's talk about the Rockets. So if you were feeling down about Houston's offseason or you found it underwhelming or disappointing or maybe you didn't like something that they did, I'd imagine this Summer League experience at least gave you some more juice because they entered Vegas with an absolutely stacked roster like Jabari, Tari, Amen, Cam. So you're already intrigued by what they were going to do. And they topped even my expectations in terms of just how fun they were to watch. Like, let's start with the guy who I was kind of concerned about last year, and the first half of his first game did not quell my concerns, and that's Jabari Smith. Jabari had kind of an underwhelming season last year for the Rockets, and I thought this was an important summer league for him. And I thought, frankly, like Tari Eason was a legitimate threat to take his spot in the starting lineup. And Jabari absolutely showed out, like 35 points per game, 7 rebounds per game, 4 assists, 1 block, 65% true shooting. So he was doing this all efficiently. And he only played 2 games, but he was like by far the best performer in Vegas that week. And that includes Garth Brooks, David Copperfield, Usher, everybody. Like the guy was ridiculous. How did you react to his game and what did you find like the most impressive?
Well, I wish I could say I saw it. So I saw the first half of the first game, and I think I even tweeted that I felt like Jabari suffered, something along the lines, I feel like Jabari suffered the most without James Harden. I thought James Harden would be the guy that would get Jabari plenty of open looks, like on pick and pops. And like you said, the first half was kind of underwhelming, and then I went to grab something to drink just because I figured like the time to leave is now before the Victor game. And I never made it back to my seat. Just, you know, everybody's, you know, it's like summer league. You're catching up with people. You're running into different people. You're talking, to the point where I end up losing my voice for a few days. But so I end up getting back to my seat. I forgot what he had in the first half, but it was nothing memorable. I get back to my seat and I look up and I'm like, wait a minute. I think he had, is that the game he finished with 35?
Yeah, yeah.
So I get back to my seat and he had 32. And then I sat next to somebody. I was like, how is he scoring? So I'm on my phone and like the reception was kind of bad. So I'm on my phone. I'm trying to look up like, where did he get his points from? Did he catch fire from three? And if I'm not mistaken, it wasn't a lot of threes.
No.
And then literally right while the guy is trying to explain to me how he's getting his points, I look up, and then that's when he hit the game winner. So I saw that play, but I can't sit here and say that I saw exactly what he did the first game in the second half. I saw a little bit of the second game, and he just looks like 1,000 times more confident. I was not a huge, huge Jabari Smith guy coming into the draft. I thought he was more so of a guy that really needed like a setup man. I didn't think that he was really good at like creating space or just kind of attacking like closeouts or, and I mean, I was just, like I said, I'll be honest, I was not the biggest Jabari Smith fan, but I do think that the Rockets made the right choice. I'm not going to say that there's somebody else that they should have selected, but I thought he would be most beneficial with like a really good playmaker that would get him open looks. And just concerned about, is he a guy that you can give the ball to at the end of the shot clock, at the end of the game, say, go get me a bucket. And usually those are the guys that I prefer at the top of the draft. And he did some things to help change my mind on that with how he played in summer league. And, you know, of course, in summer league, you don't want to, like, overreact. But if you're a Rockets fan, you have to be, like, pleased with what you saw at Jabari Smith.
So I'd always heard the guy was a really hard worker, right? And I even saw, like, last year going into the season, he looked better as a ball handler last season. Like, as worrying as last season was, like, the one thing that did surprise me is, like, he showed more flash as a ball handler in his rookie year than I think he did at Auburn. Like, in just my perspective, right?
Yeah, spacing.
Yeah, and, like, his summer league, it's like, oh, he got even better at that. Like, you could tell that was the clear, that stuck out to me the most. His confidence, as you said, and his comfort dribbling the basketball. And I was like, okay, this is something that he has clearly put in a lot of work on. He knows it's a weakness for him. He knows it's something that was holding a lot of teams back from selecting him at number one. And that's something he spent all summer on. And he looked really, really comfortable out there handling the basketball. And I was like you. Like, I could never get there with him as like the number one guy in the draft. Like, I was like, okay, number three actually felt very comfortable for me. Right, like, yeah. I was like, this is like a good spot for him. And I went back and I was like, I looked at his usage at Auburn, right? Because he was really usage heavy in summer league. And I went back to see how that compared to Auburn. He was 27% usage at Auburn. And in his rookie season in Houston, he was 18%. So we all had this vision of this guy being someone who would work perfectly off the ball. Like, just as someone like you just described, like, the theory of this game was like an elite 3-and-D power forward with this high motor and great size, right? And perhaps he can still be that guy. But now I'm kind of thinking, like, maybe this is the kind of guy you need to feed in order to get going. Maybe someone like Tarisson, he doesn't need the ball to get his. He will find his in transition, attacking closeouts, cutting, you know, catch and shoot threes, whatever. But Jabari seems like the type of guy who needs to massage the ball a little bit to get going. And, you know, to get those fadeaway twos to, in the post, to get those jab steps, those pump fakes, get to the free throw line. Some of this is like kind of like the guy, like I liked this comparison a lot, like LaMarcus Aldridge. Like, he's the guy who needs to massage the ball a little bit. Is it possible that Jabari might be someone who was kind of miscast in terms of like how we all viewed him. Is that possible?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I still think that your theory is correct. I do think that he's still going to need like a really good playmaker to maximize his strength. And I mean, you could say that for a lot of people, but I do think that like having a point guard that's like, all right, hey, Jabari hasn't had a touch the last four times down the floor. Let's get him one. I think that's going to be important because, like you said, he's not a guy that and maybe he could develop it, but he's not a guy that's like, in my opinion, very good at just creating his own offense. Yes, he can't get the rebound and push it, but he's not like and let's just compare him to the guys in this class. He's not like Paolo, where Paolo can get the rebound and then everybody else is going to run to their spots and then he can just turn that into his own isolation off the dribble. Chet has a little bit of it, but it's more so like gets the rebound, he's at the top of the key, and then you know he may get to the rim. So I do think that he does need touches, but I mean, like I said, I mean, maybe we could be wrong because maybe he's added the offensive creativity to his game that he's lacked so far in his career.
Yeah, I mean, it was encouraging nonetheless. Like even if like the Rockets are you know, we all don't know quite what he is yet. The fact that he has this, right? The fact that he did come to the point where he was too good for Summer League and the Rockets shut him down after two games, that's encouraging. That's what you wanted, right? That he was someone that I was like, okay, this is an important Summer League for him. Speaking of needing the ball, let's talk about the Summer League MVP, Cam Whitmore. 20 points per game, 6 rebounds per game, 3 steals per game. So we all knew this guy was like a freak athlete, incredibly powerful, strong, shifty. He could shoot. But I was impressed by how much havoc he was wrecking on the defensive end of the floor. He was just getting steals and blocks like left and right. Can you explain to me how this guy fell to 20? I want to give you credit because of like all the draft guys, you were the guy who saw it coming the most pre-draft. You had him mocked at 11th. And you had a quote in here from an agent that I'm going to read. Quote, teams have a tendency to overthink things. NBA teams knew coming into this process that Cam was this really quiet kid, that he doesn't smile a lot, and he isn't going to wow you in the interviews. If that's the reason he falls, some team is going to get a top 5 player that falls into their lap. Credit to that guy, and credit to you for mocking him there, because, oh my God, like, Rafael, like, please don't tell me that teams actually passed on this kid because of his pre-draft interviews. Please don't tell me that people passed on this guy because he didn't smile, because he was an introvert. Like, I hope that's not the reason. If that is the reason, can you give me some names?
I mean, I think that's part of it. And I talked to someone at Summer League, and what they said made a lot of sense. There's a human element to this draft thing. And if you're interviewing somebody and you don't get a good feel for them from an interview standpoint, maybe you're just like, okay. So, I mean, it's almost like this. If you're interviewing somebody for a job, if you're interviewing me to be on your podcast and I'm dry, I sound like I don't necessarily want to be there, I don't have like the personality for it, you may not get a good feel for me. Now, it is different because, you know, you have to have that to like have a good podcast, have a good product on, you know, as far as your content. And it doesn't have anything to do with like on the court, but I can see how some teams could be like, you know what, we didn't get a good feel. And there are guys that have climbed in the draft because they interview so well. They have so much personality. They come in the room and they shake hands with everybody, or they're just really engaging. And sometimes teams can leave that interview and say, you know what, I like this guy. I like how this guy is someone that would be good for, you know, on the court, but even off the court. We can throw him out there in a community service event. We can market him as opposed to somebody that just doesn't wow you in the interview. You start thinking about the whole picture. But at the end of the day, the main thing is what happens on the court. And so, the agent was right. Like, I think teams are going to start scratching their head. And what's crazy is if he would have went where he was projected to go, he doesn't play the entire summer league. He gets shut down after 2 or 3 games. So that's the part that's really been the most interesting to me, is that because he falls to 20, he plays all the way through.
Right.
If he goes 4 or 5, then I mean he would have been done the first weekend, maybe by Tuesday.
Yeah, it, you know, like here's the thing, like Detroit at 5, I didn't have a problem with taking Ausar Thompson over him. I think beyond 5, and when you get down to the lower, like, you know, maybe Taylor Hendricks, yeah, I don't, maybe that's not a bad pick. You know, like there are guys who can justify it. Beyond a below a certain tier, it's like when you're taking like Jet Howard, like, listen, I was not the biggest Jet Howard guy, but like when you get to that level, it's like you're taking that, you're taking Brandon Podmisk, I can never pronounce his name right.
Podjewski.
Yes. Jaime Jaquez. When you're taking these guys, it's like, all right, something seriously went wrong here, and I think what wrong here is what the agent just said. People are overthinking this.
Yeah, it's normal. I mean, like I talked to an agent. He said the same about Leonard Miller, in a sense. His game was not as aesthetically pleasing, in a sense. Mm-hmm. And he may look a little awkward, and so there's a human element to it. And sometimes people are just like, I can't compare this guy to anyone. He moves a little different. Let me go with the safer bet. And hey, if you're a Rockets fan, you have to be thrilled. I actually talked to someone within the Rockets organization, you know, kind of giving them a congratulations on winning the draft. And he's like, hey, sometimes you get lucky. Sometimes a guy falls to you. That's the easiest choice to make. I do think, like, Jet Howard is probably going, and maybe even Taylor Hendricks. But I would say those guys are going to have the most pressure, because their fan bases are going to hate them, because they're going to say, hey, we took you over Cam Whitmore. Because most fans wanted Cam Whitmore in that lottery range. So those guys that were in the lottery that were selected ahead of him, their fan bases are going to be on them pretty tough if they don't come out and outplay Cam.
Yeah, yeah. Again, like Anthony Black, you know, a lot like Anthony Black. You know, like there are guys I like in this range. It's just, I don't know, man. Like, and listen, I've been kind of tongue in cheek calling Cam Whitmore Cam medical issues Whitmore, like watching all these summer league games, because everybody seems to believe that teams were passing on him because of quote unquote the medicals. Yeah. And it's so ridiculous because everybody's so vague about it. Nobody knows exactly what the issue is. Like the closest thing I've got in terms of actual reporting was, I think somebody said something about a cartilage issue in one of his knees. I don't know which knee. I don't know how bad the cartilage issue was, but I said this after the draft, and I after like the 10th pick, I don't care if he has no cartilage in his knees. I don't care if he requires back surgery tomorrow. If he can't fly on planes like Royce White, you have to take him. Like at that point in the draft, he's a clear no-brainer selection. And what I thought happened is, you know, what that agent told you. I think teams overthought this. These teams, even in 2023, you know, they make mistakes. And Cam could be a prime example of that. What have you, like, just aside from, like, what happened in the undraft, like, what have you thought of his summer league performance? Like, what have you thought of his game? Like, is it more confirming what you thought of him as a prospect? Or have you learned some things?
Yeah, one thing I did learn was that he can be aggressive when needed. Like, there was a couple games that I watched this year where I just felt like he wasn't aggressive. For example, the game that stands out to me the most was a Creighton game. And I was watching it. I'm from Omaha, so I was kind of watching it more so as a Creighton fan than, like, to say, as an evaluator, in a sense. And it was a close game down the stretch. He didn't touch the ball for, like, 5 minutes. Didn't seem like he wanted the ball. Definitely wasn't aggressive. And he did have some games where, I mean, he'd have games where he scored like 14 points. Then he'd have games where he had like 7 points. And you're like, he's too talented to not score at least 15 every game. So I think he was kind of feeling his way around a little bit, because he did miss like a significant part of training camp with the injured thumb. But what he showed in summer league is that he can be aggressive. And there's just so many ways to use him. And when I watched him play in college and even in summer league, the first thing I thought of is that you can get creative and put him at like the 4 and play him as a small ball 4. And then imagine using him as like a screener, right? So he's going to be able to pick and pop. He can definitely attack a closeout. But imagine, like, you know, just getting him downhill, you know, as the roll man. I mean, once he gets to his launching pad, he can finish above the rim, and he can definitely finish through traffic. And so now I'm just trying to figure out, like, how does Houston implement him into their offense? I would absolutely hate for him to have all this momentum coming into the summer league, and then they don't find a way to use him, because Houston has a lot of talent and there's a lot of mouths that need to be fed. And so I'm just curious to see how it all blends together during the season.
You touched on my next question, because here's kind of the nervous question that all Rockets fans are kind of thinking right now. Like, how does the organization manage not just Cam, but all this talent? Because they were already a little your turn, my turn with KPJ and Jalen Green last year. And now they're adding Fred VanVleet, Dylan Brooks, Amen Thompson, Cam Whitmore. Like, there are four more mouths to feed. And Ime Udoka has a tough job ahead of him. Like, all these guys are going to be put in, have to be put in their optimal positions. And yet the Rockets have to, you know, figure out what their ideal lineups are going to be. So someone is inevitably going to get lost in the shuffle, I feel like, because that's like my biggest fear with the team. Like, there's so much talent, and there's only so many minutes. There's only so many possessions in a basketball game. I kind of feel like Cam's going to be a G League guy next year, because I don't know where he's going to play in the rotation. I think Kelly Eco wrote an article this morning talking about that. And you add in the financial element of all this with the second apron. If all these guys hit anywhere near their ceilings as players, there's no way they can possibly afford to pay all these players while still being reasonably competitive for a long time. Like,
yeah, they got the money. Fertitta has the money.
it's not whether they got the money. It's whether
they want to spend it. Yeah.
Well, and now there's basketball reasons not to spend it, right? Because you get into a situation like the Suns, it's like you only have minimum contracts to spend now.
Yeah.
So I'm terrified. As a Rockets fan, I'm terrified, because I think immediately of the Oklahoma City Thunder trading James Harden before he hits his prime. And I look at someone like Alperen Şengör, and I'm like, is this the guy that gets lost in the shuffle? Like, that's what I'm scared about, legitimately. What do you think of all that?
Yeah, it's almost like when you look at the roster, the only guy that has financial security are the two guys that they signed this summer. Everybody else is still playing for that next contract. They're playing for the money. And then I guess you can say with VanVleet, I think only, 2 years are guaranteed? So he's like, after one season, he's like, I got to play for the next contract.
Right.
So it's going to be interesting. Here's the thing. Like I said about Cam and Summer League, the only reason he plays the whole Summer League is because he was the 20th pick. If he goes to the G League, it's because he was the 20th pick. If he played the same exact way that he played and was the fourth pick, they're not sending him to the G League. They're going to find a way to play him. And that's the thing about the NBA, and I get it, but that's the thing about, like, the politics of it that I just think are unfair. Like, there's no reason why he should possibly spend time in the G League. And I think, like, the thing with NBA teams is they have their starting lineups set before training camp. So it's not a fair training camp. And one of my comments last year was I felt that in a totally fair training camp, Tari Eason is the starting four for the Houston Rockets last year. He was not going to get that opportunity because he was not the number two pick. So, number three pick. So Cam could be the odd man out in a sense because, I mean, you pay Brooks $86 million. And even if he's not playing up to par, you look foolish if you give him that much money. So you're going to, like, try to give him the most opportunities to succeed. And it could be at the expense of Cam Whitmore early in his career. So he may miss some of those NBA developmental minutes, which is tough because on one hand, as a Rockets, if you're a Rockets fan, you're like, hey, we just had the three worst years in franchise history. And Rockets fans are spoiled. I'll be honest. I was, like, very interested in Rockets Twitter more than any other team because it was so entertaining. Because it's like these spoiled fans that, and I'm saying spoiled in a good way. I'm not saying it in a negative way. But it's just guys that are in their 30s that have never experienced a rebuild. So I get why Rockets fans are kind of on edge a little bit. And then they had to spend money because of the new CBA. But now it's like, dang, you had to spend money. You paid Dylan Brooks, who you guys drafted anyway. You traded him for what? some M&Ms and a Sprite a few years back. And now you got this absolute steal at number 20, who I would love to have as your starting small forward. And I mean, I would love to let Cam, hey, figure it out. You're starting three, but now he's going to come off the bench.
Yeah. I tweeted this the other day. It is so strange how if you're drafted second and the guy drafted 20th is clearly better than you, the guy drafted second is going to get more opportunities, more ranks. He's going to be higher on the team hierarchy until the second contract kicks in, pretty much. And like that's going to be the way the team looks at you no matter what, because they're going off their biases. There's a reason they took that guy second and that guy 20th, right?
And that GM needs that guy to succeed.
Right.
Yeah. And that's why it's always a situation where the coach in the front office may not be on the same page, because the coach doesn't care about, you know, where guys are drafted. His only job is to win.
That's and the hope.
GM, yeah. Yes. Yeah. The GM wants to win, but he wants to win with the guys that he drafted. He doesn't want to look like, hey, I made a mistake at taking this guy this high. We need him to actually prove that he can't play. Yeah. As opposed to prove that he can. Interesting, man. I'm looking forward to next season.
Well, that's why I found Ime Udoka's comments at the press conference post-draft so interesting, because he said that he was going to make every spot up for grabs. You know, mm-hmm. That could just be all bluster. We'll see. Because if that is true, I think there is a way where these fears can be quelled, right? Because it's like if the truly the best guys in practice are winning the minutes, then you feel a certain sense of security in terms of how the team is building out the roster. Because then they're trading all the guys that need to be traded. They're keeping all the guys that they need to keep. If they're running their rotations like that, that's what I'm going to be looking forward to. Preseason, beginning of the season. By the time we get to midseason, I'm going to be very interested to see what that lineup's going to look like. Where guys are getting their touches, where guys are playing, you know, in the rotation. Where a guy like Şengün, and we'll talk about him in a second, you know, how he looks midseason.
Yeah.
But
here's what I want to add.
Go ahead. Like, yeah.
I know that's like the correct thing to say, but there's no way if KPJ plays better in training camp than Jalen Green or Fred VanVleet, he's going to start. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, there's absolutely no way that Cam Whitmore has a fair chance of passing Dylan Brooks in a starting lineup, or even Tari Eason. I think that's the right thing to say, but realistically, I just can't see it happening. I just can't see it happening. And there is a possibility, like it's a strong possibility, that Kevin Porter Jr. could be the best guard in training camp.
No, I mean, he was the best guard last season. I mean, yeah. It's very possible. Honestly, like I would respect the hell out of it if Ime Udoka did something like that, like bring Jalen Green off the bench because KPJ had a better training camp. I'm like, okay, so we're being honest here, right? Like we're being honest here, right? Like and not to say that if it's the other way around, it's not being honest. Who knows? Jalen Green might have a better training camp, but like that's gonna be, you know. We'll see. I guess the correct answer here is like we're just gonna have to see, because we're gonna know who had the better training camp by who's playing better in the minutes that they're playing, right? Yeah. Like the, just who's the better player. Like it's very easy to tell. Basketball is kind of simple in that way, where you can tell who the best guys are.
But like you said, KPJ was the best guard last year, and I mean that's a strong opinion. And what did they do? They decided to bring in somebody to replace him in the starting lineup. So, I'm like I said, I think their starting lineup is already set. If it's true, I'd be totally surprised. I'd be really, really surprised. But we'll see. That's one of the reasons why I really like the European basketball, because no matter what, the coach is the star over there. And so, like, when the coach walks on the court in some teams, the fans clap because they figure the players are interchangeable. They love the coach. And the coach has ultimate powers. It's like college basketball in a sense. Mm-hmm. If he's gonna pick the best five guys that he wants, and there's not a lot of like politics behind it. But one, because there's no draft, so you know it's not like, you know, hey, we drafted this guy here, if we got to play him. But if Ime does say, hey, KPJ, you've been the best in camp, you're starting over Van Vliet or you're starting over Jalen Green. I mean, that would take guts. But then the downside of it is now it becomes a huge media story. And then it just brings so much more extra attention to the team. Then it'll be like, is Jalen Green happy? You know, Jalen Green's not starting, or Fred VanVleet, you paid him all this money. So then sometimes it's almost like the extra media attention may not even make it worth it.
Yeah, or like you could just bury it by saying, yeah, he's playing better. You know, like I feel like there are ways to bury a story in the media. Like, you know, as a press conference guy, I used to be there all the time. And if a coach said that to me, that's it. Well, what can I possibly ask as a follow up? If the guy just says, yeah, he's playing better than him. He's better than him. I'm like, okay, yeah. What can I possibly ask him?
But what's the next article that comes after that?
Yeah, I mean,
what's Jalen Green's future? Or, you pay this guy what did he get? $130 million.
Yeah,
you paid him $130 million to bring him off the bench. But like I said, I would love it if it's a situation where Amen Thompson and KPJ are the best two guards in training camp. I would be all for, hey, this is our starting five. Can that happen? I don't know.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's gonna be interesting. So you kind of touched on it. The Rockets offseason. Do you think Fred VanVleet and Dylan Brooks, like their two biggest acquisitions, are gonna aid in the development of the young guys? And if they do, how so? Or do you think it's not gonna happen?
Yeah, I think VanVleet will help. I did think that Dylan Brooks could help, but I would have thought like, you know, maybe a team like Dallas would be like a better fit for him. Dallas didn't have the money. It does put I think with the new CBA, when teams have to spend the money opening day or whatever, it may force some teams to overpay guys, which if you overpay the guy, then you kind of got to play him to justify why you paid him. And maybe this is a question for you. Do you think if Houston did not have to spend the money, do you think they signed Dylan Brooks?
Yeah.
You think so?
Yeah, they were in on him pretty early. This was a guy they targeted along with Brook Lopez, along with Fred VanVleet. I think they were always going to sign him. It was always just a matter of what the deal was going to be. And listen, like the deal isn't optimal. I'm in the minority opinion on this. I don't think it's as bad as people are making it out to be, just because of how much the salary cap's going to be going up.
Yeah.
Like it's gonna go up like 10% a year for the next three or four years now. And by the time we're in the third or fourth season of that contract, it's going to take up like 13% of the salary cap, 12%. Yeah. You know, it's not that bad. So yeah. I'm not that and it's a declining contract too. So it's going down as well as the salary cap going up. So I'm not. You know, that crazy about it, like as in like I'm not freaking out about it, but it wasn't optimal, right? It wasn't team friendly. Yeah. I'm not gonna say that.
Yeah.
And it's one of those things where this is why a season like last year hurts Houston, right? Like by not taking a step forward, they have to overpay this much for free agents, right? Yeah. They have to overpay the market value for agents. That's why I thought it was critical that Houston take a step up, because you wanted people to come here this year. When you had all this space open up, and they didn't take a step up, and this is what they had to do to get guys, and they got guys, but we'll see how much they add aid in their development. So I touched on one of those guys. You and I have been on the Alperen Şengün train for the better part of 3 years. I made the effort to watch this guy in the BSL because a scout told me he was worthwhile watching. And I watched him like, oh my God, what is this?
Yeah.
A lot of people have jumped in the pool with us since then. That's fine. They're welcome to join us. The water is great. But I got to be honest, the way the organization has utilized him the last 2 years and how aggressively they pursued Brook Lopez has me a little nervous. It's a new coach, new opportunity. But I just mentioned how I think he's going to be a guy that might get lost in the shuffle. And, you know, going after a 35-year-old defensive player of the year candidate is a quick way to get lost in the shuffle. So did you have that same concern when you were watching their offseason play out, or were you unbothered by it? Do you think Ime is going to give him a fair shake?
So the reason I was unbothered by it, and I don't have much invested, so I'm not like, you know, a Rockets fan. So it didn't bother me like it would a typical fan. But the reason why I was unbothered by it, because to me, I was like, there's no way that this is true. Maybe this is leverage for Lopez, but there's no way they're going to give up on Şengün. I mean, players in the NBA on other teams are just talking about, this is the guy that they need to run the offense through. And I think he has the respect. I think if you took a poll of all the players in the league, like, hey, who should the Rockets guy be? I think that it would be, I mean, I don't think it wouldn't be an overwhelming choice, but I think there would be a good number of guys that feel like Şengün is the guy. And so I hope he doesn't get lost in the shuffle. I think that would be a huge, huge mistake, because I think Şengün is a max player, and I think he's going to be an all-star, a multi-time all-star.
I'm with you, man. I'm with you. Like, I think the guy has real all-star potential. I love watching him play. He is so fun to watch. And impact-wise, per-minute production, advanced metrics, whatever you want to look at, guy was just the best on the team. He just was. And he was not treated that way by the Rockets. So it's going to be interesting to see what they do next year. Second to last question. Does Jalen Green make that proverbial leap this year? Because this is a big year for him. Traditionally, like, superstars make that jump in their age 22 or 23 season. This will be his age 22 season. I'm a believer that this guy can be a perennial all-star kind of guy, a guy who can be among the league leaders in scoring on good efficiency. Where are you on that? Do you still believe in that high-end upside? Because I know you were a guy that liked Jalen Green. I'm not sure if you believed in him at like a number two spot in the draft, but I don't remember. Where do you think this upcoming season holds for him? Because I do kind of think if you're going to have an offseason like this where you don't land that megastar in free agency, you got to get one of your guys to become one of those dudes.
It's that thing for Jalen Green. Does the jump include winning? Because, I mean, like, production-wise, it's like, man, like, how much? I mean, of course, he can get better, but what, he averaged 22 a game this year? I mean, does, like, the jump include, like, being a better three-point shooter?
Yeah.
And which, you know, if he can get to league average, I mean, that would be great. I imagine, like, maybe Van Vliet would help out in that sense. I also think that he's an underrated passer. Oh. He gets labeled as being selfish, but he averaged a little under 4 assists per game. And so, you know, some people may say, oh, well, they were empty calorie numbers. But I think that if you say he averages 4.5 assists per game, that would be great. I mean, but that would be going up, what, not even an assist per game. I mean, I guess the jump would be for him to just play winning basketball. But I do think that because the Rockets were losing and the way that, you know, the organization has been perceived over the past couple of years, I think he gets like this label as like this chucker. I saw somebody post about him being like a chucker that took a lot of shots, like with 19 seconds left on the shot clock and bad shots. And I didn't think that was true.
Yeah. Jalen gets pretty mischaracterized. He it's a caricature, right? Like you label him the guy that you think he is without actually watching him. Mm-hmm. Right. And I think he's fairly, I don't want to say selfless, but like, he's not the guy that people think he is, right? Like, he doesn't have, he's not this guy with blinders. He has some passing feel. He's not someone who's ever had to pass, right? Like, at all stages of his basketball career, he's never had to be, like, he was just a guy that was going to average like 30 or 40, right? Like, he didn't have to be the guy that was going to dish out 6 or 7 dimes a game. It's going to be interesting to see if he can get to that point, right? Like that Devin Booker playmaking level of level. I think the jump includes, you know, because you're asking what that includes. I think, number one, he has to get better. Like, he has to build out his body, right? Because he is fairly skinny. He has to get stronger. Get better defensively, because he was god-awful defensively last year. Point of attack and off the ball, he has to get better defensively. Three-point shooting, yes. Just broadly more efficient as a scorer. Yeah. He was like league average true shooting percentage last year, so maybe slightly below league average. Get to 58, 59, 60% true shooting. That's where the stars are, right? That's where you need to be. And that will drive your point scoring average to like 25, 26, 27 points per game. And then you're talking about a really solid building block piece, right? That's what I'd like to see him get to. And, you know, he's a great off-the-ball player, so I'm glad the Rockets went out and got a point guard that will actually set people up, right? Like, because I don't think KPJ is that guy. I think KPJ is pretty talented, but I don't think he's that guy. So getting someone who's actually a traditional setup guy to so he can play more off the ball, so he can be that more of that cutter, that slasher, that whenever I get the ball, I'm just trying to score. I'm not trying to do other stuff. Maybe I play make if I see the opportunity. I think that's going to help in his development. But we'll see if he's actually able to do that.
Yeah, like I said, the shooting, if he gets to league average, that'd be great. That'd be really good. But I just think, like, he's progressing the right way. I think, what, he went from 17 a game as a rookie to 22 in his second year. So I think if he just continues that progression, he's going to be fine. I just think that just because people on the outside, and I'm an outsider myself, but seem like the whole Rockets situation the last couple of years has been a mess, that he is like the poster boy, or he's the face of that mess. But I think he's on the right track.
I want to pull on that thread in a second, because I'll talk about Jalen Green again, though. The Rockets culture thing. So with Jalen, I'm so glad that he got to the free throw line a lot last year, right? Because it's like, that was something that, like, that's an easy way to get more efficient, just getting to the free throw line. That's what all the top scorers in the league do. And that was something, you know, we talked about how I think Jabari's, like, actually like a hard worker, right? And you could tell by his year-by-year development. Same thing with Jalen Green, like his passing. I think he's gotten better every year as a passer. And every year as a guy that gets to the free throw line, I think that's something that really impressed me last year. So and I saw a video of him shooting. I know these videos are worthless. His shot mechanics look a lot better. They just look a lot better to me. I don't remember how they looked during the regular season, but they look really good right now. I don't know. Like, the guy's a hard worker, and everything you heard about the guy is he's a ferocious competitor. The guy, he legitimately thought he was going to be the number one overall pick until he wasn't. Right? Yeah. Like, until he was not the number one overall pick, he thought he was going to be the number one overall pick. He killed that Detroit workout. He had Detroit second guessing themselves on, who's my guy? I'm sorry. Cade Cunningham, yes. He had Detroit second-guessing themselves on Cade Cunningham. They eventually landed on Cade. But he made them think about it because of how crazy that workout was. And that's the kind of stuff that keeps you optimistic. I said it before. I think the guy's a badass, right? Like, I think, like, he was not my guy at number three, but number two, but I didn't fault Houston for going that way because of all the intangible qualities. Like, I'm never someone who weighs that stuff heavily, right? Mm-hmm. But I understand with this guy and his talent level why they may have waited.
Yeah, you know what's funny is that I never thought he would pass Cade. I was actually at the under 19s or whatever, when they were all on the same team. It was like a loaded team. And he came off the bench. But the team had Cade, had Mobley, but Mobley was hurt. Scotty Barnes was on the team. I mean, it was a really, really, really talented team.
Yeah.
But Cade was the best player. He was the best player. Even though he didn't win, I think Reggie Perry won like MVP, but Cade was the best player. Jalen was best off the bench because he didn't it was like he was so used to being like the man and the scorer. I thought he had the hardest time blending in with other really, really talented players. And I thought his development in the G League was big. I think he was going to go high either way, but I thought playing in the G League kind of helped him out a little bit just because, you know, they have, just the coaches and their system is set up for just making sure he's the best pro. But then at the same time, that system was ran for him also because that was like their first year in a sense. And so they needed him to like go high in order to like really just continue to make people attracted to the program. So I think that he has gotten better every year because, like I said, when I saw him in high school, I thought he was just – he didn't have – like you said, he didn't have to pass. There was no need for him to pass.
No.
And then before he went to Prolific – did he go to Prolific? My years all mixed up. But I know he went to a regular high school. I saw him play in Dallas, and he had like 50 points. He didn't have to pass to anybody on the team. So I think that because he's not naturally a passer, he's never had to, I think that he has shown progression. But the next step is, you know, can you play him out of pick and roll? I think if you can make him like your, you know, a pick and roll, you know, a facilitator, then I think he's going to be good. Because I do understand the theory that if you have like a really good guard, you want the ball in his hands as much as possible. And if he becomes a playmaker, then not said he's going to be Harden. He doesn't have Harden's vision. But if you can put him, play him on ball as a playmaker, and he can make the right reads, then I think he'll be able to score 30 points a game. Because now teams have to pick their poison. Like, how do we, like Harden, like, you know, Houston Rockets Harden, you had to decide, do we stop him from scoring or do we stop him from getting other guys involved? So, I actually think Jalen should study as much James Harden film as possible.
Yeah. I mean, you know, we talked about how the guy didn't really need to pass that often. The guy also didn't need a screen that often. Like, his quick, no. His first step was...
He still doesn't really need a screen. He is,
like, legitimately, his first season, I would see him get past, like, elite NBA defenders regularly. He just didn't know what the hell to do when he got past the defender because the defense was closing on him. And he still has that. Obviously, you don't lose that in your first 5 or 6 years in the NBA. And if he gets more sophisticated as a pick-and-roll operator... To combine that with his first step, that's a really, really dangerous combination. I know that's something he works on. I know that's something that the Rockets are working with him on, film day in, day out. That's something they want him to get better at. So it's going to be very interesting to see, like, you know, you mentioned how he got better in the G League. I thought he got better off the ball in the G League. Like, his off the ball movement, like, stuff, that's the stuff in the G League. I was like, okay, this is a guy that can be kind of malleable in many lineups because of how willing he is to play without the basketball. And yes, you'd like him to be more of a dynamic pick and roll guy, but I also think like there's a world in which he can be a pretty helpful off the ball guy, but he does have to get better defensively. That is probably the number one thing that he has to get better at next year. And we'll see how that works out under Ime Udoka, because if you don't play defense under Ime Udoka, I think he is one of the guys that will actually like yank you, you know.
For how long?
Yeah,
that's what I say about NBA coaches. For, you know, you can yank a star, but for how long?
Yeah, yeah. It's true. I mean, you have a very realistic view on NBA lives, right? Like this is how it works, right? Like, there are political forces that may force you to do the wrong things. But I don't know. We'll see. We'll see how much Ime is about it. That's kind of the theme of this podcast. How much is Ime going to be about what he's talking about going into next season? Last question, and I know this has been a hot topic this summer. Oh, wait. I did want to touch on the culture thing. Why is this a thing? Like, why is Houston being discussed like this everywhere? Like, why do people feel the like comfort to take pot shots at them? Like, what's so unique about their culture versus like the Orlando Magic? I don't get it.
Well, one, John Wall's interview didn't help.
Yeah.
And so not playing John Wall, basically, you know, just saying, hey, we don't want you. We'll pay you to go away because we want. So I think John could have, I think he could have helped. So, I mean, they had no veterans on the team. I mean, I just feel like, you know, it's the same for Charlotte. But I think that I would say the difference between Orlando and Houston is, I mean, let's just be real. Kevin Porter Jr., you know, I mean, he came in with the reputation of having some baggage. So it's easy to say, well, oh, yeah, he's on KPJ's on the team. And then, I mean, Jalen doesn't do a lot of talking. But he does a lot of social media stuff where it looks like he likes the lifestyle and the fashion and so on. And before, like, Powell this year, Orlando didn't have anybody, people who had any interest in social media in a sense. Right. And so I just think when you're losing, it just intensifies everything. It just makes, oh, yeah, they're losing, so it's KPJ's fault. He's this. Or Jalen, he's more interested in, you know, off the court stuff and the fashion and bringing attention to himself. And so then, like I said, and then John Wall's interview just, I think the fire started there. But then there's also people that just feel like they didn't think Silas was like a coach that demanded a lot of respect from his players. I think he was kind of like a target in a sense. And then there's also people that feel like, hey, if they had some culture, they would have got the ball to Shingun. I forgot who it was, and you can probably help, but it was a couple players that I remember came out publicly that said, like, the offense should be ran by Shingun. I think it was Austin Rivers and somebody else, I forgot, that said that. Mm-hmm. So I think that's all part of it.
Yeah, I mean, you're very specific there, which I appreciate, because I feel like a lot of this has been vague. Like, Houston's just the bad culture team because I heard it somewhere, right? Like I don't know. Again, normally when a team is this bad, nobody cares about them. But for some reason, people can't stop taking pot shots at this team randomly. Just randomly, like, oh, this team is a hot mess. I don't want Victor Wembanyama to get drafted there. Why? Like, I don't get that was so random to me. But I'm going to ask this question throughout the summer to other national figures, because this is something that it's just so strange to me how this developed overnight. Now let's get to the true last question. And this has been a hot topic all summer. How would you rank Houston's core among these other young cores in the NBA? So Detroit, Orlando, OKC, San Antonio, Washington, Indiana, Charlotte, whatever. Utah and Portland, I guess, count now too.
Yeah. Oh, man. That's a tough question. Just because, you know, on paper, they look really, really good.
Yeah.
But the game is played on the floor. And like, you look at Charlotte, for example, in Summer League, they had four first-round picks, and they're starting five, and they were awful. I don't even know if they won a game.
No.
But on paper, you know, Book Knight was supposed to be good. Kai Jones was supposed to have this upside. They had Brandon Miller. Nick Smith was supposed to be, you know, highly touted. So, on paper, you know, it's hard to go against Houston, but I think Houston's issue is, like, if you just go by talent, and then I guess you have to ask yourself, what is the cutoff between young talent? Is it 25 and under, 24 and under, whatever? I think that Houston's is, I'd say one or two, but the thing about Houston that makes it a difficult answer is because I don't think there's a defined pecking order yet.
Yeah.
Like with OKC, you know, all right, it's Gilgeous Alexander, and then everybody else falls in line. I think with Orlando, you know, it's Paolo's team, everybody else falls in line. Like I said, with Houston, I think if you did a poll of NBA players and said who should be the guy, I don't think you're going to get like over 50% for one particular player. There's some that think Shingun, there's some that think Jalen Green. There are even people that I speak to that feel like
Amen? Is it Ahmed?
Maybe Ahmed. I didn't even include him. But there are some people that I speak to felt like if Kevin Porter Jr. doesn't have the negative issues surrounding him at USC, he's a top 10 pick. And if he's a top 10 pick, then things are going to be, you know, catered toward him a lot more. Because, I mean, you can't deny Kevin Porter Jr. is really freaking talented.
Yeah, he is.
And so, you know, something like if the situation was a little different, which if he was drafted higher, he'd have, you know, the keys a little bit more, then maybe he could be that guy. You know, obviously people are going to say Jalen, and then there's going to be people that say, hey, if Jabari had the right people, the right players around him, he could be that guy. So I think Houston, and then Amen, and then you add Cam to the mix. So I think with Houston, that you could say, like, top to bottom, they have the most talented core. But they may have suffered from too much talent and not a defined pecking order. And I think that could end up kind of hurting them in a sense. And if Ime puts it all together, then he's going to be a legend in Houston. But he has a difficult job.
Yeah, that really is, like, I couldn't think of a better way to put it, because I'd probably rank them around three. Because I believe in Shea. I believe in Tyrese Halliburton, right? Like, I believe in those top-end guys, and the hierarchy falls into line after them. Houston doesn't have that top-end guy yet, right? We're all speculating who that can be. Alperen Sengun, Jalen Green, Amen Thompson, Cam Whitmore, KPJ. We don't know, right? We don't know, and because we don't know, they're just a giant question mark. But there's a bunch of talent, there's a bunch of potential, and we're all projecting, and that's why it's tough. They might be the most like top to bottom like stacked talent, but that stacked, as you said, that stackness or that depth is working against them.
Yeah, because Orlando has a lot of overlapping skill sets, but with Houston, I don't think their skill sets overlap. Like, I think, you know, you got your five, you got your four, you have your three, you have your two, and then maybe Amen and KPJ may overlap. But other than that, you figure, like, if you put their five out there, they should be really good.
Yeah, yeah, it's going to be that might be the best goal they could have next season. Find your guy, whoever that is. Find out whoever the hell is going to be that guy who's going to go grab the brass ring. And when you find that guy, it's going to be so much easier to build out the rest of the team. Well, I don't want to spend more of your time. Thank you so much for coming on, Rafael. Tell the people where we can read your newsletter, listen to your podcast, follow you on social media, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, my newsletter, NBABigBoard.com. It's a NBA draft related newsletter. I'm ready to do my last summer league article because I'm ready to talk about 2024. So I have some stuff in the works there. Then I have the Locked On NBA Big Board podcast, which is 5 days a week. We'll probably cut it down to about three in August once we kind of really get into the off season. But I still may do 4 or 5 days. So that's NBA Big Board on YouTube. And then on Twitter, Barlow, Barlowe 500.
Did you really do 50 interviews in 2.5 weeks? Did I read that right?
Yeah, man, it was crazy. I mean, it was almost like four a day. Yeah, it was crazy. I mean, I hadn't checked my Twitter inbox as far as like the people that I don't follow. Mm-hmm. And I just checked it like when I was getting the link to this. There's like a whole bunch of more on there. I was doing a whole lot. On one hand, it's like I'm very thankful and grateful that people are reaching out to me and they want to hear my takes, because just 2 years ago, there's nobody like really checking for me, 2 or 3 years ago. But then, you know, I did have a player, I won't mention his name, but I had a player that I wanted to do an interview with him and his agency. He was like, okay. Then he was like, well, who are you? Who's your following? And then they were like, eh, never mind. You're not big enough. So I know what it felt like to have somebody that you were excited to have on. It actually happened twice. And actually one was Kate Cunningham. But it wasn't him. It was like the people around him that made the decision. I never actually got to talk to him. It was like two guys that they were basically like, no. So I remember what it felt like. So, you know, my thought process behind it was, well, you know, whenever someone reaches out to me to do a podcast, I'm going to find time to make it work. And then now it's just kind of like getting overwhelming because I just get a lot of requests. And sometimes, and I don't want to say there's a podcast that's not like legit, but there are times where it'd be like a 12-year-old kid.
I've done those.
Yeah, and I mean, the kid may end up being a star one day, but he's more just like, So anyway, I did do a lot of podcast interviews, and so, but I'm just
a guy in his dorm room just trying to make it. Like, I respect
not even
it.
not even in the dorm. I'm talking about a kid that's in his parents' house with the mom in the background telling him dinner's ready and the dogs in the background. But you just never know who's going to be somebody in this space.
Yeah, I 100% agree. 100% agree. Hey, don't forget about us. I remember 2 years ago, I told you it was going to be like this. I told you you were on the show, and I said you're going to get a lot of interview requests over the next couple of years. I'm glad we got here first, or at least one of the people that got to you first.
I forgot about that. You did, yeah.
Yeah, and listen, it's only going up from here. It's only going up from here. Thank you so much for coming on. Congratulations on all the success. Your newsletter is awesome. Like I read it all the time. I'm going to continue reading it. It's highly informative. Everybody listen to this podcast. Go subscribe NBA Big Board. And thank you so much for coming on.
No problem. Thank you. I told you, anytime I can make it happen. So glad I was able to keep my word.
Absolutely.